There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and this week I'm joined with, as always, my colleague and co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan, how you doing?
Hey, Rabia, I'm good. Siraj was going to join us this week, but he is currently at Disneyland, or Disney World, whichever one's in Florida.
Siraj is getting as far away as possible as he can from Washington, D.C. It's maybe a good idea. The two of us are stuck here. Again, this week we are coming to you a day late. I once again take responsibility, but...
It's for a good cause.
The upside of that is we had some really, really big news yesterday, so it kind of worked out because we can talk about this news. So
yeah, I prepared like a super long outline, which we'll still use for today. It's going to be a whole episode.
I open up the document and I'm like, Susan, what am I looking at? It's like a table of evil.
Yes. But before we get into that, we'll go to the more recently breaking news. And first off, Michael Cohen's office got raided, and his house slash his hotel room, and apparently his car.
It was
a very exciting moment. I think they raided all the stuff they could raid. It was pretty comprehensive and amazing, and I was really excited, not going to lie. I don't think I've ever been that excited about my own cases, possibly. No, that's not true. But like in terms of like seeing an update and a criminal investigation, that was pretty high up
there. This is a very big deal, right? This is not like...
It's a huge deal. This is like...
The FBI raids people when... Here's the thing. You know, when I was looking at this, I was like, if the FBI won the documents, you know, they could have just subpoenaed stuff, right? I
mean,
this
they is... did. They had to first.
And then what happened?
Apparently, they had a reason to think they didn't get everything they needed. So they went and raided him. Now, the raid itself, like a raid, any kind of FBI raid, it's a big deal. Like, they raided Manafort's house, and that's a big deal. Yeah. But this is different because Michael Cohen is Trump's personal attorney.
Yeah.
So this is a huge deal.
Okay. So they raided basically everything, you know, all his personal space and stuff like that. This is the FBI that did it. But under the direction... But this is not coming from Mueller's office, right? It wasn't the special counsel who directed this raid, right?
So this is a developing story. And obviously, this is all kind of tentative. We're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. But from what we've seen so far... We think it was actually initiated or like it was born out of the Mueller investigation. And we're not totally clear why the Southern District of New York, they're handling it. They're the ones who actually did the raid. And there's things could be going on. But we do know this. Rosenstein signed off on it personally. So he looked at it, said, yes, we should do this. And then the call was made to have the SDNY, I think it was the Public Corruption Unit, that did the raid itself. Now... That doesn't mean they're actually involved, because obviously this is an attorney. Mm-hmm. For the president or otherwise, you can't have attorney-client communications that are validly privileged put out there. So you have what's called a taint team. And the taint team, they're separate from the main investigation, and they're there to review materials for privilege or other reasons that they can't actually be used by the real, quote-unquote, investigators. So it could be that the SDNY here is just the taint team, and that perhaps Mueller could still actually be in charge of this investigation.
Okay. So what you're saying is basically this initial team might be the one that first separates the information that actually cannot be touched because of privilege, and then passes the rest on to the actual investigators. And we don't quite know who those are yet.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unknowns.
But to get to this point, I mean, like, you know, it takes a number of levels, right? It's not just like... A person directs a raid and it happens. You have to get a warrant. To get a warrant, you have to show probable cause, right? In a situation like this, of some kind of crime. So there have been multiple layers of some kind of review already.
Yeah. So, but again, like once you, when you're looking at attorney stuff, like the attorney of your initial target, that there's special guidelines from the attorney's office they have to comply with, and it's a higher level. This is a real big deal.
Right.
I mean, any warrant, any search is a big deal, but this is like the bigger big deal. It's rare. I was pretty shocked, not at, like, you know, in a good way, I guess, when Mueller was going after Manafort's like spokesmen and attorneys. Mm-hmm. And that was much, much lower level sort of targeting of communications possibly or of just attorney actions. This means that, like, there is something really, really compelling that makes them want to go after Cohen. Now, we should back up a bit. I assume everyone knows who Cohen is because I've been laughing him for a while now, but Cohen is Trump's fixer. That's the name he likes to use for himself. He is the attorney for the Trump Organization, also like a childhood friend of Felix Sater, go figure. And he's a fixer. He goes and fixes problems.
He's the one
problems.
Who made the $130,000 payment to Stormy. You
he
know,
facilitated it, yes. And to other women. And also, he's known for threatening people. Like I've heard from a million reporters who've, like, encountered Cohen over the years. And he's, like, threatened them. Or, like, just, like, thrown F-bombs out at them constantly if they try and call up with a question. Like, you said, like, hey, I heard Trump did something that could be a little scandalous. Any comment from the Trump Organization? And Cohen will, like, threaten you, will curse you, just go off on you.
You know, he also, wasn't it like the day before the raid, he tweeted about being loyal to Trump? It was kind of
I didn't see that,
really
did he?
Weird. He did. He tweeted something about loyalty. There was a picture of him and Trump and about being loyal to people who deserve it or something like that. I was like, oh, okay.
Huh. Well,
yeah.
So Cohen's an interesting one because he is one of the loyalists of the loyal inner guard. But Adam Davidson from The New Yorker had a good thread on Twitter about this. You should check it out. But he pointed out that, like, yes, everyone in Trump world who's higher up seems loyal, but that loyalty is often more superficial than you would think. So, yes, he's loyal, probably more so than anyone else I can think of without a Trump surname. But that loyalty is only going to go so far. And when he's facing criminal charges, if and when, yeah, he might flip. And that means that Trump is royally screwed.
Well, he also, okay, so let's just make this clear. Michael Cohen's office being raided, you still think means they're not going after Michael Cohen. They're going after Trump. And this is just
the way
Cohen.
To get
to Trump.
And Cohen.
And Cohen. Okay.
But also you flip Cohen and you get Trump. But Cohen himself has done enough. I mean, again, we're not even sure what they're exactly investigating. We know that one of the things they're investigating is Stormy Daniels and the payments there.
Right.
We know that his taxi company has come under scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Wait, back up. The taxi company?
Yeah. He has like 14 different companies that he uses for taxi medallions.
Okay.
That he doesn't pay taxes.
And those things are very valuable. Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't pay taxes on them either, so they're more valuable.
Now, why would Mueller care about the Stormy stuff? I mean, I figured that somebody would be opening an investigation into that, but that would be more like a campaign finance type of thing. It's not Russia connected.
Yeah, so what's possible to happen here is that there's nothing here that's related to Mueller's scope, and that's why he referred it down to Rosenstein. Rosenstein had to refer this to the SDNY. So that could be what's happening here. On the other hand, Cohen is involved in everything that's shady in Trump land. So undoubtedly, there's stuff in there that likely connects to what Mueller's actually interested in. So it could be like it's a tandem investigation. For instance, it seems like Mueller's also looking into a $150,000 payment that Trump received during the campaign from Pinchuk, a Ukrainian, you know, oligarch kind of deal, that Cohen arranged. He's the one who arranged that massive payment to the Trump Foundation, actually. So that's something that Mueller apparently is looking into. So it could be that's part of what the raid was about, and that the other parts that are not directly related to the Trump-Russia stuff are being investigated by SDNY. Long story short, we don't know yet, but like there's no way that through this that looks good for Cohen. Like there's not an explanation here. It's like, oh, that's not so bad. Every explanation that you could possibly have for this is, oh, that's really bad.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't tweeted since being raided, and Cohen has his own lawyer too, right? Like I know the lawyers have the lawyers.
Cohen has that lawyer who got like laughed off the, I think it was a Megyn Kelly show.
Right, because he's the idiot who actually went ahead and said, yeah, Trump knew nothing about it, and my client's client didn't. I mean, he just made it worse. Donald Trump, however, tweeted about attorney-client privilege, which,
attorney-client privilege is dead.
It's dead. He's clearly terrified. So this is, I think, you know, it could be a great summer. Things are ratcheting up.
This is like a turning point for real. This is when things move fast and furious.
Okay.
And I think we're looking at the spring before stuff starts to blow up because Trump can't, you can't have this happen and Trump not be in dire straits. Cohen knows everything. He's the one he goes to, the Trump goes to when he needs bad stuff done.
Yeah.
And like really badly done bad stuff. So like there's lots of evidence left behind. Cohen is not the guy you go to if you actually know how to do a cover up. So whatever they find, it's probably going to be really bad for Trump.
Yeah.
And he was, did you see that? Oh, God.
Oh, his response to this?
Yes.
His
venting sort of session he had with the press pool yesterday.
One of my personal attorneys, good man, and it's a disgraceful situation. It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time. I've wanted to keep it down. We've given, I believe, over 1 million pages worth of documents to the special counsel. They continue to just go forward, and here we are talking about Syria. We're talking about a lot of serious things with the greatest fighting force ever. And I have this witch hunt constantly. going on for over 12 months now, and actually much more than that. You could say it was right after I won the nomination it started. And it's a disgrace. It's frankly a real disgrace. It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for.
Oh, my God. It was like, one, it was incoherent word salad. You're like, wow, even for you. It's like they took random words from like his most aggressive tweets.
Did he just, and like, maybe he just, had he just heard the news or something and it just hit him and he just couldn't.
He'd heard it earlier. He knew of it before it was publicly announced. Apparently was stewing all day over it. But it was just, and the worst line of all was, this is an attack on our country.
That's what he said. It's an attack on our nation.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, that's unreal to me. Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, he sees himself as being the country. He is the nation now. And so this is an attack on him. It's an attack on the nation. And he's crazy. But I think it's interesting that they did the raid, meaning they do not trust this man to turn over what's been requested. And they actually think evidence could be destroyed. So they have to, which reminds me of something that just happened earlier in the week, which is the fire at Trump Tower, which I shouldn't laugh about. Somebody actually died in it. But wasn't this is not the first fire, right? There've been like
there was
random fires here and there.
Yeah.
Not just in Trump Tower. Wasn't there like a fire in D.C. related to some Trump property?
Oh, there was a fire at Hillary's place, too.
Okay. People are burning stuff all over town.
Fire. It's also connected earlier in the week when Trump was asked. I think it's the first time he's actually been on the record about Stormy recently, for sure, and maybe ever. And his response to a question, I think we were all on Air Force One, and it was asked about Stormy, and he said,
I missed this.
You'll have to go ask Michael Cohen.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Well, I guess they did go ask Michael Cohen.
Right, thanks for that.
But that could have actually been a contributing factor, possibly, to what's going on here. Because, again, if Trump doesn't know about the Stormy Daniels payment and didn't authorize it, there's no attorney-client privilege there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. But that might not be what he's worried about. I feel like there's bigger stuff that he's worried about with this raid, more so even than Stormy Daniels.
I think the sheer quantity of the things he has to worry about now is probably overwhelming to him.
Yeah. Well, they're going to unearth all... And the thing is this. So, you know, you get a warrant, and the warrant could be about something, you know, the probable cause is about something specific. But if they find, in the course of this raid, evidence related to all kinds of other criminal activity that is not mentioned in the warrant, that's fair game.
Yeah, well, depending, that will probably be a subject for extensive litigation. This is a very, I trust Mueller from what he's seen so far. He's a very careful guy. He was not in charge of this, which is possibly a factor weighing against the raid being executed perfectly. It's a dangerous thing to do, because if the FBI is not doing it right, if they make any screw-ups, there's a lot of room to exclude evidence. So I'm sure this will be like, I can basically guarantee we're going to see motions practice over what they found here. But yeah, they'll try what they find. They'll most likely try and use it, even if it wasn't what they were originally targeting.
Well, you would need a really good lawyer to litigate on this issue and win. And I feel like they don't have any options left. Susan, you know what? One thing I've realized as I get older is that it's really important to take good care of your teeth. And I've been pretty bad at it, to be honest. I've had fairly good teeth, and
it's
I can't blame the baby because he hasn't been around all 43 years. But I have been taking better care of my teeth lately because I have gotten Quip.
What's Quip?
So Quip is a company that has designed the perfect electric toothbrush. It packs just the right amount of vibrations into a very slim, very new age looking design. It comes in this beautiful little package that keeps it clean. It's a fraction of the cost of the bulkier traditional electric brushes, you know, like the ones that, you know, that have been around for many, many years. And what they've done is they've combined dentistry and design just to make a better electric toothbrush.
And it comes right to your door?
Comes right to your door. So what you do is you go on to Quip and you order the toothbrush, and it comes with their own special toothpaste, and then the toothpaste and the brush heads. It's a subscription, so they'll just keep coming to your door. I just got my latest one, actually just 2 days ago, so I'm going to switch out my head. And the thing about the vibrations in Quip, it's not like any other, and I've used a lot of different electric toothbrushes in my lifetime, but this is different. It has like these guiding pulses and alerts you that, hey, it's time to switch sides. So you know exactly, you know, how much time you actually need to make your mouth nice and clean. It also comes with a mount that I love. It suctions right to your mirror, and it unsticks, and is got a cover for hygiene. I've been traveling with the Quip brush because, like I said, it's a really nice design. It's much smaller than your traditional electric toothbrush.
I'll have to give that a try and report back.
You definitely do. And you know what? It's so affordable because they'll deliver a new brush head to you every 3 months for just $5, okay? It's $5 for the new brush heads. And you know, it's not cheap to replace brush heads on other kinds
of electric toothbrushes. And that actually, the $5 includes free shipping worldwide. And Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals, including dentists, hygienists, and dental students. They also were named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year. So, Susan, you should find out for yourself why. And you know what? You can do it because we've got a great offer for our listeners and for you. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That is your first refill pack free at getquip.com/45th. So, Susan, what are you going to do after we get off?
I am going to go to getquip.com/45th and get myself a Quip toothbrush.
You've already got beautiful teeth.
Let me just tell you something. I have a bunch of attorney friends who do contract work, you know, in DC. And for folks who don't know, what this means is when there's discovery in large cases and there's just not enough human resources in any given law firm, they'll bring in attorneys for a temporary basis to review documents, you know, and respond to discovery requests. And there was a recent call for contract attorneys. And it was interesting because I can't believe they actually put this in the email. They specifically said in the email that one way you could conflict out of this, like you wouldn't qualify, is if you've already done some work related to Paul Manafort or in some of this Mueller stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know. I'm not going to name the firm, but there's a DC firm that is asking for attorneys to come and help them with definitely a request related to the Mueller investigation.
Say the firm. Which firm is it?
Should I say the firm?
Yeah, go say it. Come on.
I don't know if I should. Okay, hold on a second.
Unless you were responding to that ad, go ahead and say the firm.
No, I'm not responding to the ad. Okay. It's, hold on a second. It's OMM. It's, God, Melvity.
Huh.
Yeah. Do you know the firm? I don't know the firm.
I know them. I don't have any particular opinions on them.
So I don't know who they're representing and I don't know what's exactly going on, but let me just read you. You want me to read you the ad?
Yeah.
All right, here's what the ad says. It says, we are staffing a 50-hour per week project to start actually yesterday. The rate is $32 an hour, 1.5 for overtime. If interested, please respond to the following conflict screening questions. Please confirm that you have not, 1, worked on any matters where OMM acted as opposing counsel, 2, worked on behalf or been employed by the DOJ in connection with the ongoing Russian investigations, or 3, worked on behalf of Paul Manafort or Richard Gates. If you have worked on the above matters, please let us know. Describe the project for whom the work was performed and when. And we have quick turnaround, so please contact us immediately if you're qualified.
Interesting that they're not one of people who've worked for Manafort and Gates before. I wonder who it would be that they... Obviously, it sounds like it's not Manafort or Gates, and it can't be someone... Oh, Flynn, maybe? Or not Flynn. It could be a lot of people. Let's be real. It's hard to play guessing game when you've got so many possible defendants.
Yeah. So, okay. If anybody qualifies, they can go ahead and contact them.
Yeah, if you really want to get involved in those cases. The doc review would be fun. You could never tell anyone about it, but, you know, maybe
I know,
50 years from now, you have stories for the grandkids.
Yeah, when it's all over.
So, this is going to be... I think that this is really a turning point. I mean, maybe not. If Trump puts up with this, I think Trump will put up with a lot. So this will be a test of whether or not he's really going to fire Mueller.
That's been his immediate reaction, apparently, that he wants to fire him. He's been saying that, but I think at this point he has to realize it doesn't matter. Firing Mueller is not going to stop this machine.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because, like, also we have, well, he has to fire Rosenstein, too, and Sessions. And he'd have to, well, apparently, so Berman was his pick. It's not been nominated yet, but his... The guy that seemed very likely is going to pick for the U.S. Attorney's Office for Southern District of New York.
Actually somebody who had contributed to his campaign, even.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, but he recused himself or was recused from the investigation. So he was not actually involved in approving this little adventure that they took yesterday.
Well, that was the right thing to do.
But yeah, poor Michael Cohen is probably not having a very good day.
Oh, I don't feel sorry for the thug at all. It's been a long time coming. And you know what? He buries bodies for Trump and who knows what other stuff. He's probably buried his own bodies too. So he's got a lot to worry about. And you're right. Let's see how long he'll be loyal.
I just hope they're not literal bodies.
You know, I wouldn't put past this guy. I wouldn't put past this guy. Well, it's been an eventful few days. Another thing that happened, we have a very high-profile addition to the Trump National Security Advisor. Is that the cabinet position? I don't know.
Bastard of Bolton.
John Bolton has begun his first day at the administration yesterday. I don't even know if he's got his full security clearance at this point, but anyway,
it's a minor miracle that we're not at war right now, given like what happened yesterday. We had Syria tensions ratcheting up. We had Bolton starting his first day, And we had Trump dealing with all the Cohen drama and stress. So,
yeah. Oh, we are going to have a war. I mean, I think, look, Trump announced today that he is canceling his trip to South America so he can focus on the response to Syria. And for folks who don't know what happened in Syria over the weekend, there's evidence that the Assad regime used chemical weapons in Douma, killing about 40 people, and the images are horrific. I've watched the video. It is,
It's hard to I can't, I don't know. I feel like, you know, it's important for people to see it, but it's so hard.
It's hard. It's terrible. And I watch it so because I don't want to feel so sanitized, right? I think it's hundreds of thousands of people keep dying in that region. And if we don't see the bodies, then it's just like, it's just not happening. I actually tweeted about this, and I tweeted that, you know, most of these children who are being killed, especially in this civil war, their entire life has been in a state of civil war. Their entire life has been in a state of siege, and they die by this, right? Because it's been ongoing for 7 years. And another person tweeted back at me and said, yeah, kind of like, you know, kids in America, since they've been born, if you, you know, are under a certain age, all you have known is America at war. And I'm like, it is totally not the same thing. I get what you're saying. But no, we do not feel the impact of our war on terror. We don't. It is somebody else across the world who feels that. So it's not even in the same category. It made me crazy when I read that. But anyhow, so I will say this, though. I do believe, now, this was a red line that Obama had said many years ago. If he crosses this red line, that's it. Well, he had crossed it multiple times. Obama did nothing. We have never done anything about Syria. Not really, other than just trying to arm people. And that just made it worse, I think. I actually do personally. Israel responded over the weekend. They killed 14 people, in Iranians and Syrians, in a Syrian airfield, some kind of military base. I support a response. I do. I think that the international community has been completely quiet on this. We're just sitting back and letting these war crimes happen, and nobody's doing anything. And I think of Rwanda, I think of Bosnia. We are already way too late. So I do think a lot of players who should step up, like people, regional actors should step up. A lot of the Muslim majority and Arab nations should step up, and they're not doing it. So I think Trump is going to, I mean, first of all, he tweeted the challenge that, you know, didn't he tweet something or he said something?
Oh, his first time critical of Putin that I can recall ever seeing.
It's the first time he named Putin. He never said his name before.
Not critically, though.
Not critically.
Yeah, it was a strange, I think it's the first time possibly ever that he has said Putin and been critical of him in a way.
Right, right. And he said, you know, there's going to be some kind of strong reaction to this or whatever. And so it seems if he's canceling his trips, he's got Bolton on board, who is a complete hawk and just wants to know where all the weapons are.
We're not going to make it through Bolton's first week without a war.
You are not. I really do think we're going to have. But this would be, I don't know if it would be a straight out war, meaning where you have retaliatory strikes. But I do think there'll be U.S. strikes somewhere in Syria. And I do think they're well-deserved, so that's where I'm at.
It's not that, I just feel like I'm almost unqualified to have an opinion on any of this, because yes, on the one hand, something needs to be done, but it's like, as far as my opinion goes, it's just a raw feeling of despair about it. But it's not that easy. It's not, I don't know what the right solution is, and I know Trump's not the right man to make it. And of course, Russia's already like buzzing French and American warships, so it's not just, like, it's not just Syria. That's the problem, too.
It's true. I just think inaction hasn't done anything. Because our posture really has been inaction on this. And I do think, look, I mean, they have an internal civil war going on. Bashar Assad is fighting people who, you know, want to basically replace him, get rid of him. And he's going to fight back. But these are war crimes. I mean, chemical weapons on civilian populations, these are war crimes. These are crimes against humanity. So there are red lines that have to have some kind of response from the international community. I know the UN's going to have, there's like all these competing resolutions and stuff. As far as the resolutions have happened before too, and also have done nothing. So unless the UN decides they're going to, you know, a coalition is going to come together, and it's not even like they're saying don't fight back in this whole war. They're saying don't flip and use, you know,
don't commit war crimes.
Don't commit war crimes.
It does seem like Trump is going for a multilateral approach this time, which I guess gives me a little bit more.
He spoke to Macron. Yeah.
Comfort's the wrong word, but I feel like that at least we got that going for us. I don't know. It's all bad from here out.
Yeah. Look, Bolton wants war. He loves war, and that's a terrible thing. But on the other hand, Bolton actually is much smarter, more sophisticated, and understands a lot more of what's happening there than probably anybody right now in the White House. So I'm very conflicted.
He thinks war fixes all of it. So how sophisticated can he really be?
Yeah, maybe. But
that could be true.
Yeah, it's kind of a lose-lose situation, to be honest. So that's where we're at.
And this is exactly the mindset you want Trump to be in. making this call. It's him fuming over the Cohen raid.
Yeah.
It's next week's episode. I feel like it's going to be a doozy.
It's going to be big. And as soon as Bolton walked in, he apparently forced the resignation of one of Trump's national security, I think a deputy national security advisor. Actually, I just caught that this morning.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name. Sorry. Do you know the name?
I forget the name right now, but he's definitely doing clean out. It was the Homeland Security dude who was in charge.
Tom Bosser.
Yeah, cyber stuff.
His Homeland Security advisor. He apparently, Bolton, cyber things, which is weird. I wonder why Bolton got rid of him.
Because he's trying to do a clear out of people that he thinks won't be sufficiently loyal to him or possibly got caught leaking or God knows what. Which is also interesting because the ones he's now kicking out, maybe they'll be more inclined to talk to Mueller. And a lot of these guys were people who were involved from the very start. Like, if that guy is so inclined to talk now, I think Mueller would be very interested in hearing from him. I live in D.C., which I love. It's a good city, but it comes with certain problems. Like this morning, like 7:30 a.m., being woken up by Secret Service who told me that I need to repair my car. Yeah, I was not thrilled about that. So,
not a great way to start your day.
It was not. But once that was taken care of, and once I got done with all the Secret Service guys judging me for my parking, I started the day better with a nice cup of Blue Bottle coffee.
In fact, we had to wait 2 extra minutes to record while Susan made her coffee
it's
today.
It's true.
I got that message saying, what flavor did you have this morning?
I just like the classic dark roast. I'm not that exciting. But it was good. It took me 3 minutes. I'm sorry I was late.
Well, here's the thing. I actually do like the classic dark roast coffee too, but Blue Bottle Coffee has some really amazing, really fantastic flavors. I mean, one of my friends got the flavor's called Bella Donovan. It's raspberry, chocolate, and molasses. And then there's another flavor called Beta Blend, which is candied orange, milk chocolate, and white peach. Those are flavors in a coffee, people. You do not find that anywhere else.
Yeah. After trying Blue Bottle Coffee for the first time, I can honestly say that there's coffee, and then there's Blue Bottle Coffee. And the difference is a lot of things, but it starts with Blue Bottle's insane dedication to coffee.
Yep, that's because they search the planet far and wide and get exclusive relationships with independent growers all over the world. You know, they get this amazing coffee, then they pair it with all these beautiful flavors. And then when you order it, right then and there, that's when they roast it, grind it, and ship it right to your door. So, Susan, even as you have to move your car, you never have to leave the house to get that coffee.
Nope, it comes right to you, and they time it so it comes at peak freshness.
Well, you can get your Blue Bottle Coffee today if you go to bluebottlecoffee.com/45 and you'll get $10 off your first coffee subscription. Yes, you can get a subscription, which believe me, you want. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45 to get $10 off your first subscription. Once again, bluebottlecoffee.com/45.
All right, so moving on. Basically, Homeland Security, it's been reported, are creating a huge database. It's going to include podcasters, Susan. If we're lucky, we'll be on it.
Oh, that thing? I don't think that's really cause for concern. I think, like, every agency does that.
Yeah, I actually also am not that concerned about it, because other than other agencies doing that, I have actually personally been contracted with DHS to create a database that's much less even nefarious sounding. And honestly, half the time these projects, they get completed, funded, and then shelved and forgotten forever. Nobody does anything with them. So it's just the government inertia itself would make me feel like nothing's going to come of it. But
we should be on the list.
I just want to make the list.
Hopefully we're on the list. If not, the list is totally not worth it and they wasted their money.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. Should we get into this table of scandal? The scandal
table.
The
cabinet of scandal. Yes.
Cabinet. Is that what it's called? Okay.
So let's start with a recap of Trump's cabinet and the various issues they have all uniquely brought to the table. This was inspired in part by Pruitt, who we'll get to, because there's a lot to say there. And by the way, I'm pretty sure Pruitt is the person in Washington who had the best time yesterday, because Pruitt was, like, feeling the heat a bit, and suddenly this Cohen thing happened, and I was like, Pruitt? Pruitt who? So, whoosh, that saved him for now. We'll see what happens. But
He'll have a good couple days.
That definitely saved him a couple more days in D.C. But let's start at the top. Trump's cabinet and the vice president, Mike Pence, the only one in the executive branch that Trump cannot fire. So I've done my little scale here that Robbie, you can see I've done sort of a two-part evaluation, first for competency and second for scandals.
It's great.
So let's start with competency for Pence. You know, I rate him a standard competent levelness here.
Yeah,
that's a word.
I agree.
Because other than like being,
he gets like a 6 or 7. I mean, he's all right.
Like, he's a Trump 8.
You're right.
He is extra sycophantic compared to a lot of them. He's very uniquely qualified for sucking up to Trump. But other than that, there's not that much to remark on there. That's not an approval of his policies or anything, or like just saying he meets like the basic level of competence that you need to do this job. And for scandals, likewise, his recent scandals, like Trump era scandals, are pretty minimal. Yes, there's times where he's not been truthful, and I think with the Flynn stuff especially, that's going to come back and bite him. But other than that, like he's just keeping his head low. Every time a new like sex scandal pops up, like Pence is nowhere to be found.
Well, dude, he won't be in a room alone with a woman without his wife. So there you go. That is the whole point of that policy.
Well, I'm just really curious what his strategy here, like what's his gameplay? Because he has to know, he does know, that there's a real chance that all this ends with President Pence. And it could, and it might. So that has to be like a guiding star in his everyday game plan. But he's chosen to like pursue a path that he thinks is probably the best play for him to make by being constantly subservient to Trump and to not piss him off. Even though he can't be fired. So I don't know. I mean, it makes sense. One would almost wonder if like having some distance and tension with Trump might help your prospects later down the line, should Trump become ineligible to be president.
I mean, there's been a couple of times where there's been a little bit of like a contradiction between what Trump said and Pence said, but mostly, yeah, you're right. I think he's just keeping his head down. And I think he's waiting to see which way the shoe drops. I mean, when the GOP is rolling behind Trump, maybe he's like, all right, I should just keep quiet. There is a base here that supports this man.
I guess he feels like he can be flexible enough where he doesn't need to distance himself. He can be told, like, he still wants to ride the Trump base right now, and maybe he can change that later without any problems. And then we have Steve Mnuchin, Secretary of the Treasury, also in Trump's cabinet.
I'm convinced he wears a person's skin. He's wearing somebody else's skin. There's something off about him.
Like a little alien.
I've seen him in Independence Day being fought by Will Smith. Something's up with this guy.
Well, this guy is a hedge fund guy, but he's also a Hollywood guy, sort of, kind of. In terms of competency, I guess he's competent. He does support economic protectionism, which for me makes him like completely disqualified from the start. But in terms of like day-to-day mechanics of the job, I guess he's managing okay. I've not heard much otherwise. He's a competent adult human being. He's got that going for him. he came from a hedge fund called Dune Capital Management. And he also did Dune Entertainment, which finances movies.
I did not know that.
That's interesting. Okay. And that becomes relevant when we move to the scandals column, because he, in fact, was the executive producer for Lego Batman. And
I love that movie.
I haven't seen it.
Okay. It is so good, Susan.
Well, he thinks so too. And last year, he made a statement in an interview as Secretary of the Treasury, where he said, "I urge parents to send all your kids to Lego Batman."
Oh, that's not
good. That's promoting his own business interest.
So
he later, like, you know, wrote to I think Walter Schaub was still at OGE then, and he said he should not have made that statement, but quote, it was not his intention to make a product endorsement.
It's pretty much exactly what it sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's only the start of the Mnuchin scandals. We also have his confirmation scandals. For instance, he failed to disclose nearly $100 million in assets to the Senate Finance Committee. He also forgot to disclose his role as director of an investment fund that's located in a tax haven. He also, after confirmation, his fiance, now wife, Louise Linton, became the CEO of Dune Entertainment, which Mnuchin had left it, stepped down to be Secretary of the Treasury when he divested all his business and all that. And then Linton, who was definitely not qualified to be CEO of anything, let alone a major entertainment company, became the CEO for Dune Entertainment until that was reported on and she had to step down as well.
Yeah, it's almost like these guys don't really know what it means to divest from a company, whether it's Trump or Linton. They're like, oh yeah, it's not me, it's my wife, it's my kids, it's my left hand, my right hand's not watching.
They know enough to know they don't like it.
Yeah.
And also, let's be real, it's a dangerous move to make because you could end up like poor Rex Tillerson, who did divest and is going to get screwed in the taxes because of it. So we also have the travel scandals for Mnuchin. And this was sort of last year thing. As far as I'm aware, he's not gotten caught up in anything more recent travel scandal wise. But in October in 2017, a report came out detailing his many, many requests for expensive travel. So most government people, even the cabinet guys, they travel on commercial airliners. Now, that doesn't apply to, like, for instance, Sessions. There is a private jet for the Attorney General, so they got that thing. But Secretary of the Treasury, his ass is flying coach, unless you're on Trump's cabinet, in which case you make lots of requests for use of government aircraft. In the OIG report, the Office of the Inspector General, which does sort of internal monitoring, internal affairs, internal investigations, reported on 9 requests he made for use of planes. And let's see, the total.
In a year.
That was like 6 months at that point.
Oh, God.
And for the, so the nine trips were in the report. Seven of them were completed at the time of the report. Total cost was $811,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
And I did detail all them in the outline. I'll probably just skip through it here. But let's start with like the first one he made. The London-Berlin Europe trip he did. And an aircraft that cost $16,000 per an hour. So that whole trip, $300,000.
But Susan, can I just ask, okay, when I hear figures like this, why would any airplane cost $16,000 an hour? What is happening in that plane? What is that plane flying on? Is it being fueled by printer ink? What the hell is happening?
Lots of very expensive fuel.
That much fuel? $16,000 an hour?
Yes, they are very, very expensive to fly.
I feel like somebody's getting bilked there. Like they're getting really overcharged for the fuel and the pilots and stuff. Okay. I can't even understand how that would work. But okay. Yep. Go on. Sorry.
And now, okay. It is okay for people, for cabinet members and other than government to make like private trips or private, like, you know, either charter trips or like have government and military planes fly them. But there has to be a reason. And the thing is, for like every single request that he submitted, it was always the same bullshit explanation. It was like due to scheduling, logistics, and secure communication needs, non-reimbursable government air transport is requested. That's not enough. You can't give like a blanket form thing, which he used nine different times, to request that a military front a plane for you.
Secure communications needs. What is happening there?
So that's the line he uses. And what it means is he has to make a phone call to someone that has to be like secure. And yeah. No. So it did. That's what he used several times. Now, eventually, it got to the point where he tried to make his honeymoon trip on the government dime. And he had to go to the White House to talk to them about it. And Kelly had a little sit down with them. And apparently he got a lesson on alternative communication methods.
Is that right?
Yes.
You smoke signals. Look, you know what's amazing to me is that when people like this who are like awash in money. Like, why do you even need to try to take a shortcut like this? You have the money. Doesn't he have his own plane even? Like, why would he even need to do this on our dime? We are paying for this. This is the government. It's us. We're paying for this shit.
Why pay for it if you can get someone else to? That's Trump's motto.
But you guys have money. What's wrong with you?
But not that much money. And keep in mind, for one trip to Canada, the total cost, I think, was like $18,000. And his wife, Louise Linton, went with him. But they reimbursed the government for her flight for $700.
Okay.
So, yeah, you should go read the OIG's report. It's you know, it does conclude that there's no evidence, like, there was, you know, breakdown procedure. They should have, like, given more evidence they needed these things, but did not find any wrongdoing. Although, I feel like the guy who wrote it was kind of inserting snark where he could, or at least making his critiques known. At one point, he drops a footnote. For instance, on the trip, this was the trip to Kentucky for the eclipse, the one where, just coincidentally, he happens to stop off at Fort Knox so he could watch the eclipse on a literal building full of gold.
On a pile full of gold.
Yeah, and his excuse was that, and the reason they had to get a bigger aircraft and they didn't want to use the little one is because there's a runway at the airfield that was wet, so you couldn't use it. And there's a little footnote that drops and says, "We have not independently verified this assertion." Which to me is a suggestion that, like, oh yeah, an airplane can land on a wet runway if other ones can. Who knows?
What I want to know is, can he do this going forward?
No, I think they've stopped that. Yeah. So that's, okay. There was a, we'll get that in a bit, but there was actually kind of a halt on all this. And you know what? I did have some stuff on Louise Linton scandals, but you know what? She's not in the cabinet, and screw her.
Okay.
So let's go on to Secretary
screw
of Defense.
Her and her, yeah. Her evil villain gloves.
Oh my gosh. She's like, tries to be out of a, like a movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of a series of unfortunate events, she's definitely like the epitome of what's her face. Esme Squalor. So Mattis, I would rank him as probably number one in terms of competence in the Trump cabinet. He's also like one of the few and possibly the only one who can actually walk that line of maintaining Trump's respect and like ear while not being a yes man. I'm not sure if anyone else has managed that to the degree that Mattis has.
Yeah. Kelly lost that mantle.
Yeah. Mattis just figured out, I don't know like what secret is, but he has that secret. So he's not a yes man and Trump still respects him. Although my theory is it's definitely he benefits from the fact that he looks the part and Trump thinks he looks like a general so much that he's good to go.
That's really going to hurt Bolton, by the way. There's only so much mustache that Trump can take. So let's see how long that lasts.
Every morning, Trump's going to be like, oh, my God, I did this. I really hired the mustache man. God damn it. Yeah.
But you know what? He also can't stop himself. I can guarantee that he is going to rib him on that mustache.
Every day. Every day.
At some point, Bolton's going to be like, that, screw you, I'm done.
Trump makes fun of Stephen Miller's skinny ties, which I kind of approve of. So, not the ties. Trump making fun of him for it. And in terms of personal scandals, or like scandals, Mattis is minimal. But there is one fairly recentish dark mark on his record that I think is a little bit telling. He was on the board of Theranos, which was the scam, like, blood testing magic snake oil company.
Oh, God, that stuff, yeah.
I know. And I'm like, really? If Mattis, like, that's, who knows what he knew? Who knows how involved he actually was? But to me, that's an indication that Mattis is a little more comfy and at home in, like, the Trump swamp than I would have initially thought.
Right. But I will say this. I mean, I know boards who don't know. I mean, there are plenty of boards that operate and, you know, they have actually no idea what's really going on, like in terms of the operations of a company or the executives and stuff like that. They're just there to like kind of have their annual, their meetings and give some direction and add more board members and get some more venture capital funding. And they actually don't know. So yeah, it could mean something or it could mean nothing.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, otherwise, in terms of Trump land, he's got a pretty clean nose. And then we go on to Sessions, Attorney General, also in the cabinet. Again, he is probably, I don't want to say number two in terms of competence. He knows the job. He's good at the mechanics of it. He takes them in directions that I find abhorrent, but, like, he is good at the job. He makes the right calls that let him survive. He's still there, despite a lot of effort to get him out from all sides. So I don't like what he's doing with those skills, but, yeah, he's competent.
Yep. He's competent and evil.
Yeah.
We've established that.
Yeah. But then in terms of scandals, you know, they're much more like DC standard. Like, his scandals are usually about like the policies he has, wretched policies and like really damaging calls, as opposed to personal enrichment. He does have some like sort of tangential connection to the whole Saudi power plant deal that Flynn was involved in. But we don't know much there yet. His only real scandal was the whole lying under oath about Russia connections with the Trump campaign, which is a pretty big deal. That's definitely a scandal. But
like personal corruption, we don't see that kind of stuff with him, it seems like.
Unless I'm still very curious about his role in the Saudi power plant. Also, he's involved with Elliot Broidy, which is a very bad sign for him. Yesterday, on Monday, it came out that so when Sessions was brought on, his job is to like sort of like restaff the department. And he turned to Elliot Broidy, who is currently involved in Mueller's investigation for his role in helping UAE lobby the Trump administration, and who also has previous conviction for public corruption and bribery. So, yeah, that's who Sessions was relying on to figure out who to hire for the Department of Justice.
Speaking of the Saudi power plant deal that you just mentioned, we totally forgot to mention that there has been a whirlwind trip happening past week of the Saudi sovereign, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. And maybe we can get into that next week once he wraps that up. But he has been feting everybody, ex-presidents, Hollywood. And I think he's in France now, but he spent quite a while in America. And I think we should kind of talk about what the hell he was doing and what that means for us a little bit later.
Yeah. And coincidentally, somehow the Kushner Corporation just came up with the funds to buy out their partner for 666 Fifth Avenue.
Surprise. They've been begging.
I'm sure that's totally unconnected to anything having to do with Saudi Arabia. But
apparently they had a $1.2 billion note that was coming due in February.
Due. And Kushner Companies did not have the money they needed to buy out Vornado, who's the other partner in the deal. So where they got all that money is a mystery that I eagerly await resolution. But we're not talking about the Princeling's corruption today. So moving on to who's next on our list. Oh, we got Pompeo. He's director of the CIA, but he's going to be the new Secretary of State. In terms of competence, again, we're starting off with the ones who actually meet basic levels of competence. You know, he's former representative. He has Trump's ear and Trump likes him, but he's also a total yes man. He's at the White House an extreme amount for the CIA director, briefs Trump a lot, but apparently does not bring up things that Trump doesn't like, doesn't challenge Trump's views, which is how he's found a way to get Trump's respect, which is dangerous. In terms of personal scandals, not really any I've seen. I could have missed some, but I think the big one for me is how during the campaign, he was citing the WikiLeaks leaks about Hillary Clinton and promoting them, which is very
suspicious.
Concerning. Yeah. Well, just concerning, because he's now head of the CIA, and he was cheering on an ally's attacks on our sovereignty.
I mean, I think like Sessions, he's generally kind of a reprehensible person, kind of gross, but maybe not personally corrupt.
Yeah.
So before we had the internet and social media and all these other sources of news coming at us, for over a century, people had another fantastic news source, The Economist. The Economist is a magazine you probably have heard about, and maybe you think it's just about the economy, but it is about far more than economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from politics and business to science, technology, art, and the environment. And today, after 100 plus years, 170 years, in fact, of publication, it is still going strong.
Yeah, and you know what? You know who really likes The Economist?
Who?
Donald Trump. In fact, according to him, he tweeted in 2015, "The Economist poll, one of the most highly respected, was just released. Wow, wait until the media gets these numbers."
Now, and I don't want people to be put off by that. Don't be put off by that. That was one poll. He doesn't read it, maybe. We don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it is highly respected, so, you know. But Trump aside, there are many good reasons to read The Economist, and that it's very broad in its coverage. It is my number one go-to airplane reading material.
Yeah. Very well-respected coverage. Experts and journalists who have been covering their different fields for a long time. And an article I read this morning actually covers why Mark Zuckerberg is actually going to be testifying before Congress today for folks. And that's something we'll cover in next week's episode. But this is a big story, you know, lots going on here. 87 million people's information compromised, and The Economist already has it covered.
If you want to know everything you need to know, do your own podcast, start with The Economist.
The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing in your world, and you can get a free copy now. All you have to do is go to theeconomist.com/45th. Once again, that's theeconomist.com/45th. Enter your details, and you're going to get your free copy delivered directly to your door.
And then we get to OMB, Office of Management and Budget, and that is Mick Mulvaney, who... I'm not going to say he's like one of the competent ones in the cabinet, but he's like middle.
I don't know much about him.
I think he's a dark horse. I think he might be one that gears up more, gets more attention as we go on. But I'll put him in the middle of the pack of competence. He was a theoretical replacement for John Kelly as chief of staff. Still might be, because I don't think John Kelly's going to last all that long. But he was the one who wrote the memo that to all members of the cabinet and said, quote, "In light of recent events, the president has asked me to remind the heads of all executive departments and agencies of administration policies on travel, and that government-owned, rented, leased, or chartered aircraft should not be used for travel by government employees except with specific justification." Basically, he was the guy instructed to tell the rest of the cabinet, stop spending millions on your travel for no reason. In terms of personal scandals, like, pretty standard stuff, other than the fact that he survived it. He got caught not paying taxes for household staff, which has doomed the appointment of several other people over the years. And also got caught not paying state taxes, fairly low-level amounts, but still. But I think this sort of the bigger scandal I've seen from him came out also very recently, last week. And apparently he gave some very massive raises to at least 8 political appointees since he came in. Now, this is the guy in charge of the budget, supposedly in charge of, like, you know, making sure things aren't spent too much. But he gave at least 4 of them raises to $260,000 and some more to like $240,000, which, again, is a huge, huge increase, both from like what that position had paid before and also what those people made before. Like,
are these the kinds of positions that are like on the GS table? Like,
oh, they should be. This is outside GS, like on the GS scale, they should have like $130,000.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so the GS scale, for people who don't know, it's a government kind of pay scale. Like, you know, as you gain seniority, you go up the scale, GS-11, 13, whatever. But this is way off that table, I think. I don't know.
It's not on the table. He went around it and got it off the table and gave like massive increases to his staff without like a clear reason for why he's doing that. So that's still playing out and probably being overshadowed by Pruitt, which means I think it's not getting the oxygen it needs to really to survive and thrive. Yeah. But I think once Pruitt stuff dies down, he could be next on the target list.
And I just reading now that the raises are, I mean, almost $100,000 raises. Like, yeah. These are people who are making $150, $160. They're making $250, $260 now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that brings us to Scott Pruitt. His competency is vastly overstated. Pruitt is he's the administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency. And the idea is that despite the many scandals we'll get into, he's still there because he's really good at, like, hurting the environment. And Trump likes that. But really, I think that's more, like, that. You look at the record, and some good articles on it. Politico had a really good one. It's kind of overstating the case to say he's been effective at rolling back regulation. He has blocked a few proposals that were in place from Obama and didn't get finalized in time. He has met with a lot of, like, industry types. He's not met with environmental types. But in terms of actual changes, there's really not all that much going on, and certainly not more than a replacement could make. Which is strange that he's still there then, because his scandal list is, like, probably the longest, with maybe the exception of Mnuchin, but his are worse. Robbie, you've been following his, like, housing arrangements?
Yeah, I think he's paying $50 a night for some multi-million dollar convict that's actually owned by the wife of an energy company or something like that, something crazy.
Yeah, literally every person in D.C. is like, you're calling that market rate really now?
Right. You can't get anything for $50 a night in D.C. You can't get anything for $50 a night outside of D.C., to be honest, even. Like, I can't travel anywhere in the world and get a hotel at that rate.
The way they're justifying is they're claiming that he only had access to a single room and it was just only paying it when he was there. Like, first off, that's not how rooms work. If you have stuff there, you're paying every night that, like, every night that you're still there renting it. And second of all, it was a two-bedroom condo that he had. He was the only person in, except when his daughter was also there staying in another bedroom. So the idea he just got a one bedroom that he was like Airbnb-ing, this is a two bedroom, like nice side of Capitol Hill, posh little condo, which minimum, I'm being very, very, very generous here, would have a rent of $3,000 a month. And that's, right. That's extremely, that'd be a very good deal. And you should absolutely rent something at that price. You found it. But $1,000 a month, which is what he was paying. You're never going to find that. But it gets worse because, yes, this was a lobbyist that he was, you know, renting from. But it doesn't seem like it was quite like the quid pro quo arrangement that it might have been portrayed at first, because his landlord didn't really want him there. It turns out that they tried to get him out for months. And he
was that right?
He wouldn't leave.
That's hilarious.
He wouldn't leave.
Originally, I wouldn't leave either if I'm paying that much.
It was like a 6-week deal when he first got to D.C. with, I guess, the idea being they do a little favor, give him a place to stay while he's looking for new long-term housing. But then he wouldn't go. So his landlord, the wife and husband, lobbyist couple, kept talking to him, and he wouldn't go. So finally, in August last year, they changed the locks on him.
You are kidding me.
No, they
I thought maybe they evicted him or something.
They changed the locks on him. So literally, his response to do was to tell his staff to schedule lots of international and like domestic travel for him so that he could have somewhere to stay, basically. Because he had been homeless in D.C. He got locked out of his place. So he goes on like this massive tour where he stays in hotel rooms on like government's dime because he no longer has a home in D.C.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
What is wrong with these people? Where do you even find people like this?
Well, that's what I was wondering. So I was looking into, I'm like, a dude like this cannot just come out of nowhere. Like, this is a sign of some real, real scandal, like, history here. And there is something really shady going on because I was looking at his financial arrangements. So when he was in Oklahoma, he was the attorney general there, and his annual salary was $132,000. His wife doesn't work. He's the only income. Their assets from the financial disclosures are not that significant. His sort of investments give him about $7,000 to $20,000 a year based on the ranges reported.
Okay, that's pretty modest, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd like that, but...
So he's, like, at $150K, maybe?
Like, maybe.
Right.
But he has $1 million house with an $850,000 mortgage.
That doesn't add
that
up.
That math does not work out. So his monthly salary would have been, like, maybe $8,000 a month? His mortgage, because it was a 10-year mortgage.
And that's before taxes, I think. I think after that's taxes.
I think after taxes, about $8,000, maybe.
Okay.
But his mortgage is $5,500.
Right. Okay.
But there's no, that's not sustainable. There's no way that's how
you can't live on that. No.
Like, there's a story there. And what I found particularly awful about this dude is that the same, like a month after he gets this massive mortgage on an income that cannot support it, he becomes the only attorney general in all the U.S. to turn down the National Mortgage Settlement Fund, having to do with like the Great Recession, like the foreclosure crisis fallout.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, he turned it down. 49 other AGs accepted it. He turned it down because he thought it'd be unfair, and he thought it would penalize financially responsible homeowners.
Wow. And it would not. It absolutely would not. By the way, forget the payment. How do you even get approved? You cannot get approved for an $850,000 mortgage with that kind of salary.
Well, if you're doing moves that massively benefit the banking industry, I guess it's easier to get a loan.
Yeah.
But, you know, his record of having very generous loans given to him goes back. In 2004, when he was a state senator, had a very modest salary of like $38,000, he was able to buy a minor league baseball team with a loan given to him by the same guy that loaned him the housing mortgage. And that was like his share was like $1.6 million on a $38,000 salary.
There's something really shady going on here. Yeah.
Wait, you're saying that people with salaries that aren't over 100,000 can't get $1 million loan for a baseball team?
You know, yeah, that's what I'm saying. there's definitely a level of corruption here. I wonder how has he escaped like a real investigation here?
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure it's just a coincidence that he then takes actions while in office that significantly advantage the banking industry. And I'm sure it's totally a coincidence that the same guy who gave him these ridiculous mortgages is now hired by him for like a $170,000 job in the EPA.
Susan, my head's gonna explode.
Yeah. That guy who gave him good mortgages and helped him get the baseball team. Yeah, he's now in the EPA as like a senior advisor.
What's his name?
Cannot recall it at my tongue, but I do know he can't be a banker anymore because he got banned from it for his shady acts. But he can be in the EPA.
Okay.
Yeah, this is so swampy. It's hard to see how he even got qualified. Yeah.
And this guy was the attorney general of a state. Forget the EPA. He's the attorney general. He's like the highest ranking attorney of a state. Oh my God.
It was Kelly. His name is Albert Kelly. Yeah. He is now the head of the Superfund program. But in July, the FDIC banned Kelly from banking for life. He can no longer participate in any kind of banking roles because of his unfitness to serve as director, officer, or person, at any bank. But he's totally qualified for the EPA. Yeah. And also, in case you're wondering, the Oklahoma City Redhawks is the team he bought. Which, by the way, that same banker also financed the purchase of it from Pruitt a few years later at a massive profit.
Yeah, he's getting his little kickbacks from all these exchanges, I'm sure.
Yeah. Which brings us to the other scandals from Scott Pruitt, which take on new significance in light of his strange financial situation. For instance, he's the one who is having all these insane security precautions, like spending $56,000 or whatever, a ton of money on a soundproof phone booth for his office.
And he apparently has traveled with, I just saw recent reports, like this entourage of security personnel that is unheard of, unprecedented. And what I want to know is, Susan, why is he so scared? Like, what is he scared of that he needs this level of security?
That's the thing. Is he just paranoid? Or is he actually
been like this?
Is he actually afraid?
Right. As Attorney General, I don't think he was like this before. I think this is like a new kind of paranoia, right?
He did live in Oklahoma or in Tulsa when his job was Oklahoma City and had his staffer drive him 200 miles round trip every day to his job.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
So
maybe
he's been weird. Like, I'm just saying, I initially thought all this stuff about like his ridiculous, like three times larger than normal, and also 24/7 security detail and a soundproof booth and like his like checking for bugs in the office was a sign of a paranoid personality. And he probably is paranoid, but like, I think there's a real question here. If there's something legit that's motivating his actions, like, is he actually afraid of something?
He's hiding something.
But anyway, what it also shows us is that there's probably a reason that Pruitt was trying to stretch out his like house crashing situation as long as possible, and why he struggled to find housing in D.C., which is that he can't afford it. Mm. He still has the mortgage in Tulsa. He's still, even with his raise, his EPA raise, that doesn't leave much room for a D.C. apartment.
Right. And his wife is not, she doesn't work.
Nope.
It's one income.
So yeah, that's, there's going to be some ridiculous stories coming out of that guy. And I don't think he can last. Even though Trump did tweet in favor of him. And said like,
oh, that means nothing.
I know, basically. That's very temporary. And he has tons of other scandals too that we'll just blow through, but like, for instance, he's also given his staffers raises that weren't justified. Like, he lied and claimed he had no idea about the raises, went on Fox News and said he had no idea about the raises. And of course there's emails from those staffers saying Scott Pruitt approved his raises, so so
amazing. All right, so he won't be lasting long, but I'm sure that's at the end of his stories. We're gonna probably discover a lot more about him once he's kicked out.
Like, why he's actually needing all that security. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to have, like, your office checked for like, if you're hiding, but to have actually physical security personnel, that's a different kind of paranoia. That's a fear of being physically attacked type of paranoia, which is what I don't understand. Like, who is his enemy? Who is trying to take him out? Is there a hit on him? What's going on?
I don't think it's really the guy who yells in the airport at him, like, you're hurting the environment or whatever. That's an excuse for taking first class everywhere. So, we may have to finish this list a later date because I just realized scandals are way too long.
They are. Are these in alphabetical order?
No. How do you put these together? It was more like who I felt in looking at the time.
All right. Well, you know what? I see the next one. Well, two down is Linda McMahon. And just a little heads up, a little birdie told me that a story is going to break in the next few days that might mean she's going to be pushed out soon. Yeah, I just am not allowed to say anything else about it, but I'll share offline.
Maybe we should not talk about that now, because my outline, like the first column is like, she seems fine, question mark.
Well, competency maybe.
Yeah, like
seems this could go in the second column.
Seems to be transitioning quite well in roles. Like she stays on message. She's like, she seems pretty good at the job, to be honest.
Well, to be fair, the information I got is not directly about her, but it is related to her. It will impact her, probably, yeah.
Well, maybe we should, that's a sign we should stop now and resume next week so that my scandal column can be properly updated.
That sounds good. By next week, the story should come out. And you know what? The way this administration operates, I feel like even the story breaks, she might still hang in there like the cockroaches that they are. So.
Man, they got Pruitt to go through and they got Mulvaney. Like, unless this is a really bad scandal, she's going to be pretty far down there in terms of priority.
Yeah. She might still hang around. All right. Well, sounds good. Well, thank you so much for this sorted list of squalor, cabinet of squalor. And we literally are on page like 13 of 25.
Jesus. Well, I didn't expect the news break, and also I didn't realize quite how many scandals there were when I started.
Yeah. It's going to be, you can continuously update this. At some point, I think you could turn this into a book and sell it. So maybe we'll see how that goes. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. And folks, we will be back in 1 week with more news. Have a good week.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.